The search for an incoming University of Montana student continues today. That's our top story on Montana Evening Edition. I'm Christopher Allen.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. An investigation by the Billings Gazette shows up to half of Montana sex offenders haven't received tier designations, which indicate their likeliness to reoffend. And fire officials make a surprise downgrade of the fire danger level in Missoula County.
A Banks, Idaho man went missing on his way north to Missoula last week after he left to start school at the University of Montana. Family members reported 21-year-old Lucius Robbie missing when he didn't arrive in Missoula last Wednesday as planned. Ravalli County Sheriff Chris Hoffman says several leads have failed to locate Robbie or his vehicle.
We, like everybody else, has been given the information that's available, simply that he was on his way to the University of Montana. We only assume that he would come through Ravalli County, as it's the most obvious route for him, through Lemhi County. An attempt to locate has been broadcast at every shift that's been oncoming, and again, we'll continue to follow up on any lead that we get.
Hoffman says the Ravalli County Sheriff's Office has been working with Boise and Lemhi counties in Idaho to locate the missing man. Robbie was last seen August 20th, traveling in his blue-green Subaru station wagon with California plates and two orange kayaks strapped to the top. One lead indicated Robbie's vehicle was seen Tuesday on Route 75 near Panther Creek, which is about 40 miles southwest of Salmon, Idaho, and Highway 93. Authorities believe Robbie may have detoured through Panther Creek on his way north to Missoula. Authorities are asking anyone with information regarding Lucius Robbie's whereabouts to call the Ravalli County Sheriff's Office at 406-363-3033.
In other news from around the state, more than half of all sexual offenders registered in Montana don't have a designation that indicates how likely they are to reoffend and sets requirements for checking in with authorities. A review by the Billings Gazette found 59% of sex offenders registered in May and June, and 58% of those registered in August didn't have a tier designation. Since 1997, convicted sexual offenders are supposed to be given a Tier 1, 2, or 3 designation, identifying them from least to most likely to reoffend. Out-of-state offenders and those convicted before 1997 are treated as though they're Tier 1 offenders. The 2013 legislature passed a bill that gave district court judges the authority to assign a tier level to an offender after sentencing. Since then, 200 offenders have been evaluated and assigned tier levels.
A Frenchtown man has been charged with felony attempted child prostitution, and six others in the Kalispell area have been arrested in a child sex sting. Authorities say more arrests are pending from the sting that involved an undercover detective offering girls ages 10 to 15 for sex in exchange for money. 41-year-old Curtis Edward Foster appeared in Missoula County Justice Court on Friday after police say he tried to set up a sexual encounter with a 13-year-old girl. Police say a part-time youth pastor is among those arrested. The Flathead County Attorney's Office says all the men will be charged with felony sexual abuse of children. The Montana Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force took part in the four-day operation that ended Thursday.
A 37-year-old Big Timber man has been sentenced to nearly 6 years in federal prison for his role in a drug trafficking case that brought methamphetamine from Washington State to the Bakken oil fields. The Billings Gazette reports Lloyd Leon Westervelt was sentenced Thursday by U.S. District Judge Susan Waters. He was arrested with almost a half pound of nearly pure meth in his car, along with several loaded guns. Meanwhile, 25-year-old Dennis James Lotka of Sydney pleaded guilty Thursday to possession with intent to distribute. He faces sentencing on December 3rd. Court records say Lotka confessed to getting about 2 ounces of meth each week from ringleader Robert Dr. Bob Armstrong during a four-month period beginning in October 2012. About a dozen people were arrested in the case. Armstrong is scheduled to be sentenced on Friday.
A one-year-old girl escaped injury after falling out of a third-story apartment window in Butte and landing in the grass below. Butte Silver Bow Undersheriff George Skulatich told the Montana Standard that the girl was on a bed below the window when she heard a dog barking Friday evening. The girl got up to look at the dog, leaned up against a screen window, and the scream popped out, causing her to fall. Skulatich says the girl was crying, but alert and conscious when first responders arrived. She was taken to the hospital for assessment and released that night. He says the girl was very lucky because she narrowly missed the side of the brick building. Skulatich says no charges will be filed.
Here's something Western Montanans don't see a lot of in late August. That's a fire danger downgrade. Wildland fire officials with the Missoula County Fire Protection Association have dropped the fire danger rating within Missoula County to moderate, a downgrade from high. The Department of Natural Resources and Conservation's Jordan Copen explains to Edward O'Brien the reasoning behind today's decision.
Yeah, things really cooled off, as you can see. The temperatures definitely plummeted over the weekend. We got a lot of moisture, you know, quite a bit of lightning in some of those storms too, but it really didn't matter in some places, over an inch of rain. So things have definitely gotten wet. We're still, you know, urging the public to be careful with fire. Sometimes, you know, we're seeing some frost out there in the mornings in some places, and that really dries grasses and cures things out. So things can still be extremely dry.
And also by the middle of the week, temperatures back up in the upper 80s, but that apparently isn't such a big concern.
Yeah, not too much. I think by next weekend, things are supposed to get into the high 50s, mid 60s. So, yeah, by the weekend, things are going to cool down again. I think we're supposed to get a couple of systems coming through.
Is this basically the end of fire season?
You know, some people would argue that, but I would say no. I think we're still going to have those, you know, pretty hot and dry days in September. People still need to be extremely cautious out there in the woods. This has definitely brought fire season down. We're definitely seeing numbers really low from previous years. I think we burned just a little over 20,000 acres altogether, where back in 2012, I mean, we've gone over 1 million acres. So we're doing pretty good this year,
I should say. Jordan Copen, Public Relations Specialist with the DNRC Southwestern Land Office. Thanks a lot for your time.
You bet.
The Missoula County Commission takes public comment on a proposed $126 million budget this Wednesday and then casts its final vote on Thursday. That budget total represents a 4.75% increase from the last fiscal year. Commissioner Gene Curtis says there are many reasons behind the proposed tax increase. For one, a need for more staff to keep pace with an ongoing increase in child neglect cases.
The other, of course, is in relation to the very public case about crime victim in relation to sexual assault. We did settle with the Department of Justice. The settlement that we negotiated was one that focused on attention to the victims rather than attention to minutia of looking through records, which is what the Department of Justice was proposing.
Curtis adds much of the proposed tax increase can be chalked up to public demand for services.
Public has told us our records aren't as accessible as they'd like. Our website is not the best. It's not intuitive necessarily. So we're doing an increase of 2 mils to the tech fund, and that will help to develop a new website. It will have a new agenda management system and content management system, so people will be able to electronically find things a lot quicker. There's an increase in the park mills. I don't think people realize that County Parks has had 1.5 people that have worked there and carried out the work for a long time, and so did increase that. There's more and more demand. You see it nationwide on people wanting access to parks and trails.
She says the county will be working harder to improve communication with the public.
One of the big ones probably was hiring a new CAO. When you change somebody at that leadership level, there's a lot of discussion that happens about, well, where is the county going? Where do we want it to go? And what do we need to do better? And we realized that communications wasn't always our best suit. You know, we tend to respond to when the public says, what the heck, why is somebody suing you, rather than telling people the process that we've been going to and the solutions that we've been looking for and all along. So we are beefing up our communications department, and we're also adding what we're calling a project or a development coordinator.
And she says that position will help Missoulians work through that bureaucratic process. The Missoula County Commissioners will take public comment on the budget proposal Wednesday at 1:30 in the lower conference room at 199 West Pine Street. A final vote would take place the next day.
Officials say 86 schools in Montana will serve free breakfast and lunch to all of their students starting this year under a newly expanded federal program. Montana Superintendent of Public Instruction Denise Juneau said the free meals will be available to about 15,000 students each day. She says 117 schools met the criteria and are eligible for the program. The deadline to join the program is August 31st. As part of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, a school is allowed to offer meals to all students if at least 40% of them qualify for free meals through participation in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or other assistance programs. The program already has been implemented in 11 states and is expanding to all 50 states for the 2014 through 2015 school year.
Police in Billings are making extra patrols through a city park after a rabbit was hit with a blow dart. Lieutenant Kevin Iflin tells the Billings Gazette that a woman on Friday reported spotting kids a week earlier shooting a blow dart at a rabbit in 54-acre Stewart Park. John Thompson of Billings Parks and Recreation says workers are trying to catch the rabbit using a live trap. Iflin says Billings City Code prohibits hunting in parks, and using a blowgun could also be a violation. Iflin says animal cruelty charges could also be a possibility. Bob Gibson of Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks says the rabbit population runs in cycles, and currently the population in Billings and many other places has swelled.
Award-winning author Pete Fromm has published 4 novels, 5 story collections, and a memoir. More than 200 of his stories have been published in magazines, and 2 films have been made from his work. His latest novel, If Not For This, has just been released, and he talked about it with The Right Question producer, Shereen Newman.
In the first paragraph, on the first page, you tell the reader that Maddie ends up in a wheelchair and she's being pushed around by her husband. And yet, throughout the story, she refers to them as the lucky ones. Why?
Well, because that's the way they look at themselves. When they meet, they fall pretty much head over heels with each other and have all these plans. They're going to have a whitewater business together, and they're going to stay in the valley and the Tetons forever and raise kids. They're excited about that. And when she has a diagnosis of MS, they both treat it as simply another bump in the road. We're still getting everything we want. We've got it going on. All the good stuff's happening. And there's this other thing, but yeah, whatever. We'll just keep going. And it's less denial than we can overcome. We're not going to let this get in the way. So it's a toughness more than a head in the sand kind of thing.
The book's title, If Not For This, came from a Dave Matthews song. Do you remember what grabbed you about that lyric in the moment?
Oh, yeah. I was working on the story and starting to look for a title. And this is a song that I had for quite a while. And you know how you can hear a song so many times and never quite pick up all the lyrics? And I'd finished writing one day, and that song was on a playlist, and it came on, and I think the verse is, "So, my love, do you believe that we could last 1,000 years or more if not for this, our flesh and blood?" And it just seemed like, oh, that's probably what was in my head when I started this story. I probably had heard that subconsciously and said, I'll write a story about that. And this couple that thinks, that, oh, we could easily last 1,000 years if not for this one big thing. It's our flesh and blood that's going to tear it down. So it was a sort of a no-brainer once I finally heard the lyrics while I was working on the story.
This is a story that I think describes the truest kind of love. Is that what you set out to do when you wrote this book, to describe something that's indescribable?
Yeah, sort of. That's a good way to put it. There's so much written on everything that doesn't work out, and I think it's easier to do that. I think you have conflict inherent, and you're going to have big, bold scenes of things falling apart. And so I really did want to write. I knew it was going to be a love story. You know, the origin of the story is a marriage, which doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a love story, I guess. But these guys were so nuts about each other that I said, "Well, I want to write a story about that, where it stays that way, where the bond only tightens." Trying to describe the indescribable. Yeah, I guess that's really, in a way, what I was trying to do. You know, if you're going to set a goal, it might as well be an impossible one.
Pete Fromm lives with his family in Missoula. His new novel is titled If Not For This.
In the forecast tonight, west of the Divide and in central Montana, Tonight, mostly clear, lows in the mid-30s to lower 40s. Tuesday, mostly sunny, patchy frost, highs in the mid-70s to lower 80s. And in southwest Montana tonight, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Scattered rain showers and isolated thunderstorms in the evening. Isolated rain showers after midnight as well, lows 40 to 45. Tuesday, partly cloudy, slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs 65 to 75. And now for the editorial comments of Tom Power.
The Oregon Department of State Lands recently denied a permit to Amber Energy for its proposed coal shipping port on the Columbia River at Boardman. That proposed Murrow Pacific coal port is the smallest of the three coal ports still under consideration in the Pacific Northwest to move Powder River Basin coal from Montana and Wyoming to Asian markets. It may seem obvious that mining more coal and sending it off to be burned is likely to increase air pollution, including greenhouse gas emissions. However, coal companies, often with the support of the federal government, have argued that at worst, exporting U.S. coal to fuel electric generators elsewhere in the world simply displaces other coal that would have been burned, leaving pollution levels largely unchanged. Some go further to argue that the export of Powder River Basin coal will actually reduce carbon and other toxic air pollutants. One such study gained some headlines recently asserting that, quote, exporting U.S. coal to Asia could drop greenhouse gas emissions 21%, unquote. That study envisioned the Powder River Basin coal currently fueling the Boardman electric generator in Oregon and the Centralia generator in Washington, the only coal-fired generators in those two states, being exported instead to South Korea via Amber Energy's proposed Murrow Pacific coal port. The electricity currently being generated by those two Pacific Northwest coal-fired generators would be replaced by building two natural gas-fueled electric generators. This thought experiment is a bit disorienting, since both Washington and Oregon have negotiated agreements already that those two coal-fired generators would be retired. In addition, as was just mentioned, the Amber Energy Export Terminal that was at the heart of this imagined scenario has been denied a permit by Oregon. But setting the counterfactual character of this thought experiment aside, it is easy to understand how combining these changes in electric generation in the Pacific Northwest and South Korea could lead to lower air pollution emissions being calculated. Ceasing the burning of coal at Boardman and Centralia will obviously reduce greenhouse gas and other toxic emissions. That is why those plants are being retired. Adding an equivalent amount of natural gas-fueled electric generation will not completely offset those pollution reductions, since the combustion of natural gas is less carbon-intensive and, in general, has lower levels of other toxic pollutants than the burning of coal. This, however, assumes that the leakage of natural gas into the atmosphere from the production, shipping, and use of natural gas is quickly brought under control. Shipping the Powder River Basin coal all the way to South Korea will involve the burning of a lot of diesel fuel and the emission of significant amounts of pollution from trains, barges, and ocean-going ships. But in this thought experiment, much of the increased air pollution associated with transporting coal to distant markets was calculated to be offset by the fact that the coal-fired electric generators in South Korea are of more recent vintage and are more efficient in their use of coal to produce electricity. As a result, they are cleaner on a per kilowatt-hour produced basis. The net result of combining all of these changes in electric generation in two countries oceans apart is an imagined reduction in greenhouse gases and other toxic air emissions. Hence the headlines asserting that exporting Powder River Basin coal would reduce air pollution and the threat of climate change. The obvious problem with this thought experiment and its optimistic conclusion is that the changes that have been combined are not causally related to each other. In order to export coal to South Korea, no coal-fired generators in the U.S. have to be shut down. Arch Coal, for instance, wants to develop the Otter Creek coal deposits to serve Asian markets. And other coal in the Powder River Basin is also available. There is no shortage of Powder River Basin coal. So the shift in electric generation in the U.S. from burning coal to burning natural gas is not being triggered by the demand for coal in Asia. It has been triggered by low natural gas prices and increased public concern about the air pollution associated with burning coal. That has led to a decline in the burning of coal in the United States and more coal being left in the ground in the Powder River Basin. Instead of artificially linking independent events in order to concoct positive environmental benefits from exporting coal, we need to focus on what opening up particular coal markets in Asia to a very large deposit of relatively low-cost coal, namely the Powder River Basin, is likely to do to those markets. Powder River Basin coal can carve out a share of those Asian markets only by competing with existing coal suppliers and underselling them. That will reduce the cost of coal-fired electric generation and encourage expanded 50-year commitments to many more coal-fired generators there. That, we know, is the wrong track for both the U.S. and the world.
Tom Power is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Christopher Allen. Thanks for listening. And please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.